demanded that he mind his place and not do anything to fuck with the life she created for herself.
Hey, said Jack. Yeah, I went for a little walk.
I've heard a lot about you from Catherine, said Bruce. It's nice to finally meet you, Jack.
Bruce let go of Katie and approached him, reaching out for a handshake. He was tall and muscular with black hair, olive-tan skin, and a strong jawline. Jack felt a little annoyed by the fact that Katie's fiancé was basically handsome, though he recognized it as a superficial Paleolithic response.
Yeah, he said. Nice to meet you, too.
Bruce squeezed his hand into a vice grip, which Jack was happy to reciprocate. He saw the look in the other man's eyes as he realized just how much stronger Jack was, and he couldn't help but smile. Katie watched them from a few steps away, fidgeting nervously.
"What's with the trench coat?" asked Bruce, eyeing Jack's duster.
"It was a gift," he said. "From..." He glanced at Katie and thought better of what he was about to say. "From my grandfather."
"I think you're a little too pale to pull it off, bud," said Bruce.
Jack found himself wondering how pale Bruce would be after having a hole punched in his stomach by a supernaturally strengthened fist. He took a slow breath, reeling in his inner caveman.
"Bruce," said Katie in a chastising voice.
"Sorry," said Bruce. "I like to speak my mind. Gets me in trouble with a wife sometimes."
It seemed like it would have been a little too petty for Jack to point out that they weren't actually married yet. It would have been even more petty to point out that he'd had his finger inside a certain tight, usually hidden part of Bruce's wife's anatomy the previous night. Jack just kept smiling instead, knowing that it would more probably infuriate Bruce more than any other reaction.
"Katie," he said, "can I talk to you for a second? I need to get your opinion on something, in private."
Jack's bloodthirst had been building slowly ever since the fight with the muggers. It reached the point where each breath he took made his throat feel dry and itchy. His temples were pounding in time with his heartbeat, miniature headaches laced with an edge of dizziness.
"We were just leaving," said Bruce.
He walked back over to Katie and put his arm around her again.
"I'm sure you understand, Jack. Catherine's been so busy lately that we haven't had many nights together."
Katie nodded slowly. She looked uncomfortable, but it was impossible for Jack to tell whether it was due to him or her fiancé.
"We can talk in the morning," she said. "If you need anything, Ryoko's here."
"Katie, I..." "See you later, bud," said Bruce, cutting him off.
Jack watched them as they walked past him and out of the mansion. Bruce's hand slipped from being around Katie's waist to resting on one of her buttocks. He glanced back at Jack over his shoulder with a wide grin on his face as he shut the door. The mansion was quiet. Jack stood alone in the foyer and knew he couldn't blame everything he was currently feeling on his bloodlust. He was jealous, and it was stupid. As much as he disliked Bruce as a person from their relatively brief first meeting, he couldn't ignore the truth of the situation. Katie had lived a life without him in it for over a decade. It was unfair for Jack to show up on Lesterin Island and expect a damn thing from her, emotionally or otherwise. She'd been helping him. But his issues with Mira and with the changes he'd been going through were not her burden to bear. She wasn't the little girl who'd promised herself to him. She was a grown woman, with a life and a future of her own. A grown woman who'd found love and agreed to marry someone in pursuit of it. With that said, he wasn't at the point of feeling sorry for himself, and he certainly wasn't at the point of giving up. If she'd already been married, he probably would have thrown in the towel.
Probably. Maybe.
Jack felt his headache ramping up as he made his way over to the stairs, forcing him to hang onto the railing to keep from losing his balance. He was annoyed with himself, and doubly annoyed over how he'd passed on feeding on the female mugger, even though he still thought it had been the right choice to make. He tried to breathe slowly and clear his head, hoping it would help limit his suffering.
"Mr. Masterson?"
Ryoko's voice came from the lounge, and the light turned on an instant later.
"Are you feeling all right?"
Jack cleared his throat and forced himself to stand up straight. The last thing he needed was Ryoko worrying about him more, or even being around him, when his willpower was on the verge of failing.
"I'm fine," he said, "just a little tired."
"If you don't mind me asking, what were you doing outside so late, sir?" asked Ryoko.
She'd apparently been sleeping, as she had on a short blue nightgown. Her hair was down for the first time Jack had ever seen, and combined with her soft facial features, it made her look very young.
"I'm a night owl," said Jack. "I just like to go on walks sometimes."
Ryoko bowed slightly, accepting his explanation without further question.
"Is there anything you need, sir?" she asked. "I was going to head to bed early, since I wasn't sure if you'd be back or not tonight."
"I'm all right," he said. "I don't need anything."
"Miss White made some tea while she was here, if you're thirsty," said Ryoko. "I had some myself, actually. It's quite good."
The tea. Jack closed his eyes, trying to tamp down on the excited direction her words had sent his thoughts in. Katie had dosed the tea with the anti-enthrallment potion. He could bite Ryoko without having to worry about her sustaining serious lingering effects, if he wanted to. If he waited until she fell asleep, he might even be able to do it without her waking up.
"Mr. Masterson?"
Ryoko walked over to him and set a hand on his shoulder.
"Are you sure you're okay?"
Jack felt his muscles twitching, demanding that he grip her by the arms and sink his fangs into her neck right there and then.
"It's late," he said. "You should head to bed, Ryoko. Please."
He opened his eyes and looked at her, trying to make her understand without having to say the words. Ryoko brought her free hand to her chest, her lips turning down into a worried frown. He must have looked even worse than he felt.
"If you're sure, Mr. Masterson," she said.
"Call me Jack," he said.
Ryoko smiled.
"Fine. Good night, Jack."
It was a small victory, but it made him smile, and it gave him the resolve he needed. He watched her as she made her way back toward her room. The temptation was still there. It wasn't a thing that could be banished through a single decision. It was constant and insidious, and it made Jack worry over whether he could trust himself for an entire night with Ryoko under the same roof. He went up to his room and attempted to fall asleep. It wasn't like it had been earlier in the day, when the bloodthirst had been counterbalanced by the fatigue and newness of the sensation. Instead, his throbbing head conspired with the dryness of his throat, forming a constant, looping demand for him to act on his urges. Jack headed downstairs into the basement. He found the hidden panel and made a half-hearted attempt to guess the code that would open the door to the workshop. His hope was that there would be something inside that might help, a recipe for a potion, or a hidden incantation, or possibly a magical muzzle to physically prevent him from attempting to bite someone. He didn't manage to guess the code, and hadn't expected to. Jack slid down against the cold stone wall of the basement, trying to direct his frustration at Mira for turning him in the first place. He was sitting directly across from one of the wine racks, and furrowed his brow as an obvious potential solution came to him. It wasn't classy, but he didn't care. Jack found a bottle of one of the newer vintages, less likely to be missed, and opened it with an antique corkscrew on one of the nearby shelves. He drank straight from the bottle in long, unflattering gulps. The taste was flat and dull, though that may have just been due to what he was comparing it to. He drank the entire bottle and was halfway through his second when he finally blacked out.
Chapter 19. Jack awoke on the basement floor with a pounding headache and a blanket pulled up to his shoulders. He groaned as he sat up, unsure if the discomfort he was feeling was due to his bloodthirst or a hangover. He was surprised to find that he wasn't as desperate for blood as he'd been the previous night. It was, at least in part, due to his roiling, liquor-sick stomach. But even discarding that, the bloodthirst was notably muted. He made his way upstairs slowly, wincing as he opened the basement door and stepped out into the foyer. Sunlight poured in through the windows, too bright for it still to be morning or even early afternoon.
Ryoko came out from the kitchen, smiling with relief when she saw him.
"Mr. Masterson," she said. "I was starting to get worried. How do you feel?"
"Hungover," said Jack. "But otherwise, all right."
"I tried to help you to your bed, but I wasn't strong enough to carry you," she said. "You didn't feel like you still had a fever, so I thought I'd wait instead of calling for a physician. I wasn't ignoring you, sir. I just thought it might upset you if I made too much of a fuss."
"No, you did the right thing," said Jack. "The blanket was all I needed."
Ryoko smiled and bowed slightly at his praise.
"Would you like me to fix you something to eat?"
she asked. "I was on my way to purchase groceries, but I can hold off for a minute if you're feeling hungry, and there's tea if you're feeling thirsty."
Jack shook his head. "I'll manage."
Ryoko nodded and headed outside. Despite how rough his body and head felt, Jack was pleased with himself. He'd found a solution to his bloodthirst. Granted, not one that he could rely on indefinitely, and certainly not one that would be appropriate in most settings. But it was reassuring to know that he could stop himself from losing control by drowning his mental faculties in alcohol. He wondered if he could get the same effect with sleeping pills, or another drug, prescription or otherwise. He was a little surprised that Katie hadn't stopped by to check up on him. He wanted to know the details of what had happened to her after he'd left her in the warehouse, and he was sure the same was true in reverse. Thinking about Katie made Jack remember seeing her with Bruce the night before, and he ended up having to lie down on the couch in the lounge and play a game on his phone to chase off annoying thoughts related to that encounter. Half an hour later, he heard a heavy knock at the mansion's front door. Jack sat up and frowned. Ryoko usually came in through the servant's entrance in the garage, and Katie still had a key. He made his way to the door and opened it. Bruce was standing on the other side, dressed in his tan and yellow sheriff's uniform. Jack furrowed his brow.
"Bruce," he said, "what's up? Did Katie send you to grab something?"
Bruce shook his head once, narrowing his eyes.
"You know damn well why I'm here," said Bruce.
Jack met the other man's glare and tried not to wince. He'd been wondering how Katie would end up handling the situation with Bruce ever since he'd first kissed her, handcuffed to the workshop's weapon rack. The question had only become more prominent after the last time he'd fed on her, with the two of them going about as far as a man and a woman can without doing the deed.
"Ah," said Jack. "Right. I suppose I do."
He scratched the back of his head. He didn't feel guilty, exactly. Especially not after the way Bruce had tried to go all macho on him the night before with his verbal barbs. But he did feel his fair share of regret, especially when he considered how Katie would be the one suffering the brunt of the fallout. He wouldn't lie to Bruce if the other man wanted answers. At least not about this. It just didn't seem right.
"How do you want to handle this?"
asked Bruce in a gruff voice.
"To tell you the truth, I've never really been in this position before," said Jack. "I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not sure how much me saying that helps on its own. You want something to drink? Wine? A beer?"
As hungover as Jack still felt from the previous night, it seemed like the conversation they were about to have was one that would need the extra social lubrication. Bruce furrowed his brow, looking more than a little caught off guard.
Okay, he said. "It's a little early, and weird as shit for you to offer, but I never turned down a free beer."
Jack gestured for Bruce to come in, leading him into the lounge and grabbing them each a drink from the fridge. He handed Bruce one and then took a couple of seconds to organize his thoughts.
"Listen," said Jack, "I don't know what Katie told you, but really, it wasn't her fault. This is a very strange situation, one that neither of us were expecting to be in."
"What does Catherine have to do with anything?" asked Bruce. Jack hesitated, suddenly getting the distinct impression that he'd totally misread Bruce's intentions.
He shrugged. "Apparently nothing."
"Where were you last night, Jack?" asked Bruce. "Tell me the truth."
"I was hanging around the mansion," he said quickly. "I went out for a short walk, but that's basically it."
Bruce nodded a few times. He took a long sip of his beer, draining most of the bottle in a few sips. Then he spiked it against the floor, and the sound of shattering glass echoed off the walls as his expression shifted into open disdain. "I knew there was something off about you," said Bruce. "The stupid trench coat should have been a dead giveaway." His voice was laced with cold, barely bridled anger. It prickled Jack, and not just for the obvious reasons. His bloodthirst bubbled in the background, feeding into his irritability. "I don't like your tone," said Jack. "And I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not sure you do either." "The sheriff wants to have a word with you, bud," said Bruce. "We know what you've been up to. It's better for your health if you come along quietly." The sheriff, of course. Bruce had shown up in uniform. He was there on duty, though how seriously he took his role was an open question. He'd accepted the beer from Jack after all, though perhaps he'd been hoping that it might get him talking. Bruce smirked at him, and Jack had to work to keep from reacting in the worst possible way. How in the world had a man like him, of all people, won Katie's affection? He tried to keep his annoyance out of his expression, shrugging and doing his best to play innocent. "I have no idea what you're talking about, Bruce," said Jack. "I'm not even from around here. What could I possibly have?" Bruce lashed out, grabbing him by the cuff of his shirt. Jack suppressed the instinct to retaliate immediately and violently. He was so tempted to throw a punch or an elbow into Bruce's face, but it was during the daytime, and the lounge was bathed in sunlight. Still, even without his vampiric strength, he might be able to do some damage if he aimed his blow properly. No, resisting arrest was not a good look, especially not when it would give Bruce that much more leverage over him. Jack took a slow breath and forced himself to smile instead of fighting back. "You stupid fucker," said Bruce. "You'll admit it to me, and then I'll let you talk to the sheriff." Jack shook his head. He was, at the very least, now relatively sure that Bruce didn't know about the depths of his recent nighttime activities. If Bruce had actually scratched under the supernatural surface, the last thing he'd ever consider doing would be putting his hands on him. "Admit what?" asked Jack. "I honestly don't know what you're talking about." "We found your fucking wallet in Bert's tent," said Bruce, "and he's been missing for almost a week now." His wallet. Jack was still wearing the same clothes he'd had on last night. His hands went to his pocket out of habit, where he always put his wallet. It wasn't there. It could have fallen out of his pocket easily enough, but Jack knew that it hadn't. He thought back to the moment when Mira's spectral hand tendrils had felt inside his duster while she'd been talking to him. One of them had probed inside his pocket and apparently stolen his wallet in the process. She'd framed him, though Jack couldn't begin to fathom what she had to gain out of it. "Speechless?" asked Bruce. "Figures. I would kick the fucking shit out of you if I didn't think it would piss Catherine off. I still don't understand how she can claim that you were like her brother once." Jack winced at the last revelation. Katie saw him like a brother? He shook the thought off, knowing that there were more important issues at hand. "Fine," said Jack. "I'll talk to the sheriff." "I wasn't giving you a fucking choice." Bruce pulled out a pair of handcuffs that were, as far as Jack could tell, identical to the ones Katie had used on him. The metal felt cold and sharp against his wrists. Chapter 20. The ride into Lessertown was a silent affair, with Jack sitting handcuffed in the back of Bruce's sheriff's cruiser. He wondered what they would have talked about if they'd gotten off on a different foot. For all of Bruce's faults, it did seem like he cared about Katie, in his own angry, possessive kind of way. It was because of those faults that Jack found it hard to feel guilty about the secret he and Katie shared, and the lines they'd crossed because of it. He didn't like the idea of sneaking around with an engaged woman behind her fiancé's back. But he'd stay silent for the sake of Katie's overall well-being, and for the fact that she was taking a risk of her own by helping him. Katie had a life that, for whatever reason, included Bruce, and Jack cared about her enough to not fuck it up, at least if he could help it. The sheriff's office was down the street from the mayor's mansion. Bruce parked in a small private lot around back, and then opened the cruiser's passenger door.
Jack smiled and nodded to him, acting like he did whenever Ryoko was tending to her maid duties and enjoying the reaction he received in return.
"You better be on your best fucking behavior," said Bruce.
"Sheriff Carter's getting on in years and gets a little scattered sometimes. You just admit to what you did and don't get in the way of us carrying out justice."
Jack couldn't resist grinning at him.
"Are you sure the sheriff is the one who gets a little scattered sometimes?" he asked. Bruce yanked on his cuffs and let out a noise that was half frustration and half surprise when the movement barely did anything. They were in the shadow of the building, and that made a difference. But as much as Jack enjoyed the advantages of his vampiric physical enhancements, he wasn't interested in earning himself a resisting arrest charge. He eventually let Bruce lead him inside. The interior was small and open, with a chain-link partition separating the waiting area from the back. A single dispatch officer, an older woman with curly gray hair, sat at the desk, looking half asleep.
"Is Kurt in his office, Melinda?" asked Bruce.
"Mm-hmm," said the woman.
Bruce pulled Jack through a door in the side of the partition. There were a couple of empty jail cells further down the hall, but they walked past them and into a small, rectangular room in the corner. Sheriff Carter was, as several people had mentioned to Jack, rather old. The youngest he could have guessed would have been 70, and that was probably being generous by at least a decade. Sheriff Carter wore a pair of thick, dusty glasses, and still had all of his hair, though it had passed beyond gray into snow white. What caught Jack's attention were his eyes, which still harbored an obvious intelligence. The sheriff scanned him over quickly, frowned a little, and then turned his attention to Bruce.
"Why is he in handcuffs?" asked Sheriff Carter.
"You told me to bring him in," said Bruce.
"For questioning," said Sheriff Carter. "Not for arrest. Take those blasted things off him."
Bruce opened his mouth as though he intended to protest further. The sheriff's expression took on an intense edge that reminded Jack a little of when Katie decided to get fierce.
"Deputy Booker," said the sheriff. "Do I have to repeat myself?"
"No," said Bruce. "Of course not."
His hand shook slightly as he got the key into the handcuffs. Jack rubbed at his wrists as they came off, unsure what to make of the old sheriff.
"Sheriff Carter," said the old man, extending his hand.
"Jack Masterson," said Jack. Sheriff Carter flashed a familiar smile and nodded.
"Have a seat, young man," he said. "I have some questions for you."
"I'm all ears."
Jack sat down, feeling a little nervous.
"We've met before, you know," said Sheriff Carter. "Back when you were just a boy, I was a good friend of your grandfather."
He smiled, his expression briefly taking on a faraway, nostalgic quality.
"Anyway," continued the sheriff, "you came into town to settle his estate?"
"That's right," said Jack. "I got in the day before yesterday, in the afternoon."
"You still have the stub from your plane ticket?" asked Sheriff Carter.
Yeah, said Jack. "It should be in my wallet."
Sheriff Carter folded his arms and looked at his deputy. Bruce coughed awkwardly and hurried out of the office. He returned a minute later, red-faced, and holding both Jack's wallet and the ticket stub.
"Bert went missing over a week ago," said Sheriff Carter. "You couldn't have been involved. I'm assuming you were in his tent, but that's not a crime, especially when the mayor already mentioned that he'd asked you to look into the disappearance."
Jack nodded, feeling a smile sneak onto his face at the wiliness of the old man.
"Bruce, give this young man a ride back to his house," said Sheriff Carter, "and apologize for being an asshole."
What?
Bruce glared at Jack, his hands balling into fists.
"Sorry."
"I appreciate your honesty, Jack," said Sheriff Carter, "and I'll give you my own in return. I hope you stick around. Peter was a good man, and this island needs more of those. If you're even half the man that he was, you'll have my respect."
"I'll keep that in mind," said Jack.
"Thanks."
Bruce was fuming as they headed back out into his cruiser. Jack grinned at him as he climbed into the front passenger seat, doing his best not to say anything he might regret later.
"He's senile," said Bruce, out of nowhere. "Doesn't know what he's talking about. He's barely lucid most of the time."
He seemed pretty lucid to me, said Jack. He'll be retired by the end of the year, said Bruce. I wouldn't read too deeply into all the bullshit and smoke he tried to blow up your ass.
One of you is certainly blowing smoke, said Jack. That's for sure.
Bruce scowled and sped the car up as he pulled onto the road up the slope, clearly intent on having him out of the car as soon as possible. The two-way radio in the cruiser's console crackled to life as they approached the last intersection before the mansion's driveway. Bruce pulled off to the side of the road and grabbed the mic.
Yeah? He snapped.
A kid reported strange noises up at the old quarry, said the feminine voice on the other side.
Also said he thinks he saw Bert.
Got it, said Bruce. I'll go check it out.
Jack felt his heart start to beat a little faster. He and Katie had thought it weird that Bert's body wasn't where they'd left it in the warehouse. Had they actually defeated the ghoul after all? Or did Mira have a blood magic spell that let her revive a dead body a second time?
Mind if I tag along for this? Asked Jack.
What? Asked Bruce. Fuck off. This doesn't involve you.
It does, seeing as how you accused me of being involved in his disappearance.
Jack leaned forward and lowered his voice. And just between you and me? I have a bad feeling about this. Bruce glared at him, but he didn't object any further, gunning his cruiser forward up the slope, past the road that led to the mansion. The eastern half of Lesterin Island was mostly rocky, impassable terrain, but there was at least one road leading up along the jutting cliffs. Jack watched Bruce slowing the pace of the car as the road narrowed, in some places thinning out to barely a single car width. The road meandered back and forth along the cliffs, forcing them to spend 15 minutes covering a relative distance of only a mile or two. The old quarry was at the road's end, set atop a particularly expansive cliff ledge that a deep mining pit had been bored into. Bruce parked the car and glanced at Jack. He scowled and rolled his eyes, and then climbed out of the car.
If you do anything suspicious, I'm pulling my gun, said Bruce.
Paranoid much? Asked Jack. He got out of the car and started looking around. An abandoned storage building with a chain door and a heavily rusted metal loading dock stood off to one side. The quarry pit itself had a chain fence surrounding it, but it was collapsed in places where the edge of the rocks had crumbled free. A wider circle of orange caution tape surrounded the fence, and Jack ducked under it as he slowly began exploring the area. A noise came from behind the storage building. Jack felt a pervasive sense of deja vu as he slowly rounded the corner next to Bruce. He spotted Bert immediately, recognizing the denim jacket and dirty jeans. Bert was standing upright, but facing away from them, slouched forward slightly and staring off at nothing in particular.
Bert? Shouted Bruce. What are you doing up here, bud?
Careful, said Jack. There's something off about him. He might be dangerous.
He wasn't sure how much he could say about what he knew, or rather, how much Bruce would believe.
He's not a bad guy, just a little down on his luck, said Bruce. Come on, Bert, let's get you back to town and see if the sheriff can find you somewhere to stay for...
He trailed off as Bert turned around to face them. His face was a complete mess. One of his eyes was missing from the socket, where Jack had stabbed Katie's silver crossbow bolt into it. His cheeks and mouth were stained with blood, and his jaw still hung open at a dislocated angle. Beyond just that, Bert looked visibly different than he had the other night. His body was swollen, and his arms and legs stretched his clothing like overstuffed sausages. He took a step toward them, moving with an unwieldy, stumbling gait.
Fuck! Bruce drew his pistol and took a step back. Bert, what the fuck happened to you?
Bert let out a hideous, gurgling growl in response. He took a stumbling step back, and then surged forward with a sudden rush of movement. Bruce opened fire, and Jack didn't blame him for it. The gunshots were deafeningly loud, and didn't slow Bert down any more than a strong breeze would have. Jack was a pace ahead of Bruce, and he brought his arms up to defend himself when he realized Bert was heading for him. He tried focusing his blood magic and only received a pulsing headache in return. Scowling, Jack remembered what Katie had said about him using his powers during the day. The sun was out,
which meant that he was basically on the level of a normal human in a physical fight. Bert slammed into him before he could get out of the way, knocking him through the air. Jack hit the fence surrounding the quarry pit at high speed. The chain links groaned against his weight, and for a terrifying second, he thought they would give out under the pressure. Bruce fired another round of shots at Bert, but the ghoul didn't seem to be paying him much attention. Jack rolled as he slid off the fence, hitting the dusty ground and stumbling back to his feet. Bert was still moving toward him. If he charged again, Jack would have the pit at his back. It was both a danger and an opportunity.
Fuck this!
Bruce shook his head and made a hurried retreat toward his cruiser. Jack had all of his attention on Bert, but the sound of the car starting and hurriedly turning around wasn't something he could ignore. He glanced over in time to see Bruce fleeing in his cruiser, not even attempting to swing the car by Jack to offer him a chance of joining the escape. He would have felt offended if not for the life-threatening danger Bert currently presented to him. Jack tried to circle around to the side, but the ghoul was quicker than he looked. He moved with stumbling steps, sometimes dropping onto all fours, but always managing to cut Jack off before he got a chance to reposition himself away from the fence and the quarry pit behind him. Bert pressed forward, entering attack range. He made a wet, coughing noise, and suddenly lurched the upper half of his body forward. A glob of green phlegm the size of Jack's fist sprayed out of the ghoul's throat. Jack dodged to the side, watching as the disgusting ooze hit the fence where he'd been standing and instantly disintegrated the metal links.
"You really are a foul creature," he muttered. "And here I was hoping we could be friends."
Bert let out a roar and leapt at him, swinging his arms with wild, flailing strikes. His elbows seemed like they were dislocated at the joint, which caught Jack off guard and let the ghoul get a strike onto his shoulder. It felt like being hit like a metal nunchuck and made most of his arm go numb. Jack was wary of putting his hands in direct contact with the monster, so instead, he attempted to launch a front kick at Bert's chest to push him back. He realized his tactical error he'd made as soon as his foot was off the ground. Bert didn't try to dodge, instead, throwing all of his weight forward into Jack and knocking him off balance. They both slammed into the fence. The chain-link metal groaned and then gave way. Jack grunted as he fell backward. Luckily, the fence bent, but it didn't break, instead tipping inward to hang down the inside lip of the quarry pit. Jack managed to get his fingers through a few of the links to hold on, but Bert had his ankle in a tight grip. He swore out loud, wishing that it was dark enough for him to use Spectral Hand to get an additional grip on something. Bert thrashed, and the movement caused one of the posts securing the bent fence to come loose. Time seemed to slow as the other post followed suit, dropping Jack and the ghoul backwards into a pitch-black pit of indeterminable depth. Chapter 21. The fall seemed like something outside of time, a suspended moment of terror and impending doom. Jack was out of breath when he hit the bottom, though the sensation of landing flat on his back against the rock would have been enough to force any remaining air out of his lungs. It took a few senses to come back to reality on the cold stone, and he felt bewildered at the fact that he was still alive and able to feel his body. He hurt all over and could feel blood dripping from a cut on the side of his forehead. His ribs, hip bones, and shoulders were screaming in pain, but nothing felt like it was broken. The inside of the pit was nearly pitch black. The angle of the cliff surrounding the quarry on three sides, combined with the depth of the mine itself, meant that it would only ever be in full sunlight for a few minutes each day when the sun was directly overhead, which left room for Jack's vampiric abilities to function, saving him from otherwise certain death from the landing. He groaned as he sat up, cutting the sound of it short as he realized that he still wasn't out of danger. Bert was in the pit with him. Jack started hoping that the fall had been enough to put the ghoul out of his misery, because the alternative was the stuff of nightmares. A scratching noise came from the other side of the pit, extinguishing that hope. Jack went still, his terror rooting him in place. It was an insidious kind of fear, old and familiar, and compelling enough to cut his legs out from under him. He still couldn't see anything,
But then again, of course he couldn't. He had his eyes closed. He wasn't there in the pit anymore, but back in his childhood, in the blank section of his memories, right before he'd last left the island. He remembered that smell of death and decay, the darkness and the hopelessness. It all had something to do with how his parents had died. Trying to remember it was like searching for an object out of a dream. What was it that Katie had said about dream weaving again? Using magic to trick a person's mind into forgetting inconvenient memories. Was this the type of experience that such an extreme measure would be reserved for? The scratching noise came again, and Jack knew he couldn't stay afraid. He couldn't, and he didn't need to. He had power now. He wasn't a child. Mira had taught him that much, even though she was his enemy. Jack took a breath and forced his eyes open. They took several seconds to adjust, and when they did, he almost hated having them open. The pit was a truly revolting place, both in smell and in appearance. A significant amount of trash and refuse had been dumped into the bottom, so much so that it was almost impossible to pick out which shadow lump was Bert, who hadn't started moving enough to stand out. Still, he wasn't about to let the circumstances paralyze him again. He wasn't going to run, at least not without finishing the fight. He wasn't powerless, and he'd recovered from the fall first. He had the advantage. He took a step toward the center of the pit, resisting the urge to flinch back as his foot brushed across a garbage bag buzzing with flies. A gurgling noise came from the other side, and he could just barely make out Bert's silhouette as the ghoul staggered to his feet. "Took a bit of a tumble, did you?" shouted Jack. "Well, come on then, let's finish this." A second wet, coughing noise came from another section of the pit. Jack felt his confidence crumble like a sandcastle against the tide as a second monstrous form began to rise upward amidst the trash, followed by a third from behind him. Three against one. He and Katie had struggled against Bert when the odds had been in their favor, and that wasn't even bringing into account the fact that she'd had her crossbow with her. Jack spun in a slow circle, trying to figure out a way of positioning himself that would at least give him a chance. He tried not to think about the acidic phlegm Bert had hacked up earlier, and how quickly the fight would be over if he took a glob of it to the back of his head. One of the additional ghouls let out a low, rumbling hiss as it reached its feet. It was slightly smaller than Bert, but shifted to the side with quick, jerky movements that gave the impression of a dislocated sort of dexterity. It hadn't started closing the distance toward him yet, but it would, soon. They all would, soon. Jack needed a weapon. He had his blood magic, but the idea of using Spectral Hand against three lumbering monsters seemed overly optimistic. Katie had said that it was possible to use spectral magic to form weapons or shields, and Jack had seen Mira using hers almost like whips. Why not a sword, then? Bert had slowly started toward him, and Jack could also now hear the ghoul behind him crumpling through the trash. He snapped his arm to the side, reaching inward for his blood essence and focusing it into a spell. He pictured exactly what he wanted in his mind's eye and felt his magic stirring to life to oblige him. The spell he manifested was similar to Spectral Hand, but functionally different. A sword formed within Jack's fingers, a black blade with red accents in the pattern of veins. It was long, almost 4 feet from handle to tip, and tiny puffs of black smoke curled around it in the same way that a warm object in the cold might give off condensation. The blade was perfectly symmetrical, with no crossguard or obvious hilt. It felt substantial in his grip, but it weighed far less than it should have, barely enough to slow his arm down. It was a sword formed from blood magic, a spectral sword, and it was exactly what Jack needed. Bert stumbled toward Jack through the trash, as did the ghoul to Jack's left, but there was no coordination between the two monsters. Bert was like a runaway train kicking through the garbage as he moved. The other ghoul scampered on all fours, letting out a sinister, oozing hiss. Jack's sword-fighting experience was limited, basically extending only to playing with sticks as a child with Katie. He swung his sword in a somewhat frantic two-handed slash
a bit like a batter trying to connect with a baseball. The ghoul on all fours was within range, but it twisted back at the last second, only taking a shallow cut across the stomach. Bert was still closing on him, but Jack's sword was light and maneuverable enough to allow him to quickly shift into a reverse strike. He swung for Bert's head, but the ghoul shifted his neck to the side slightly. The ethereal blade clipped what was left of Bert's ear, scoring an injury that was no more than superficial to the lumbering monster. The third ghoul slammed into Jack from behind, catching him completely off guard. He stumbled forward, and one of his feet caught on an old tire, sending him sprawling into the disgusting trash and grime that coated the pit's floor. It was all Jack could do to keep from impaling himself on his own weapon. He kept his sword tight in his grip and quickly rolled back to his feet. All three of the ghouls were closing in on him, managing to unify their attack by luck, if not through actual strategy. He swung his blade wildly, fending off each ghoul as it drew close. It was like trying to keep a pack of wolves at bay with a tree branch. They flinched backward, more out of surprise and uncertainty than out of respect for Jack and his weapon. He gritted his teeth, feeling a sudden rush of anger, both at the monsters and the hopelessness of his situation. The ghoul behind came a little too close. Jack spun around, whipping his sword into a horizontal slash intended to push his opponent back. The ghoul's proximity put him within range of the attack, and the spectral sword cleaved into the monster's abdomen like an axe cutting through rotten wood. Jack pressed his advantage on reflex, feeling his anger build with each strike. He pulled his sword loose and followed up with an overhead cut that severed the injured ghoul's arm completely. The hideous monster let out a gurgle and collapsed into a pile of garbage and disgusting-smelling blood. A blow struck Jack in the side of the head, hard enough to knock him over and mottle his vision with black stars. Bert had snuck up on him while he'd been busy with the third ghoul. Jack rolled over onto his back, holding his sword up defensively, ready to cut at a foot or a hand if another strike came. Bert didn't hit him. Instead, the ghoul sucked in air, making the hideously recognizable wet noise that telegraphed someone about to let loose with their spittle. Jack vividly recalled what the acidic green goo had done to the metal fence and immediately began to move. He rolled over his back shoulder and onto his feet, not wanting to take even a step further into Bert's spitting range. The other ghoul left standing was on all fours to Jack's right, slowly coming toward him, more in the manner of a crawling insect than a sentient creature. Jack felt like he couldn't focus on one without ignoring the other. He took a step backward and heard a tin crunch as his sneakers scraped across a discarded metal trash lid. An idea came to him, and he reached down to scoop it up, wielding it by the handle like a medieval knight's shield. Bert suddenly jerked his head forward, releasing his acid attack. Jack let out a terrified shout and desperately tried to take cover behind his new shield. He heard the acidic phlegm impact, like droplets of water against a tin roof. It burned tiny holes into the metal lid, but it didn't continue through onto his face, which was about as much as he could have asked for. The crawling ghoul picked that moment to launch itself into a shrieking tackle, flying through the air like a movie monster in the midst of an ambush. Jack shouted again as he slashed his sword in a wide arc. He was only holding onto it with one hand, but the weapon still did serious damage to the ghoul, all but disemboweling it in midair. Unfortunately, the strike didn't stop the monster's momentum. The ghoul landed on Jack, knocking him onto his back and pinning him to the ground. Jack cringed as he struggled to pull free, feeling as though he was swimming through blood, garbage, and unidentifiable nastiness. The ghoul tried to bite down on Jack's face. He forced what remained of his shield into the monster's mouth and then swung his sword in a desperate flailing strike across its back. The ghoul twitched as the blade made contact. Jack swung again and again, and blessedly, the creature went still. It took him a second to roll himself loose. Almost no sooner than he'd found his feet did Bert slam into his shoulder and knock him down to his knees. Jack tried to pull himself up, but Bert slammed a fist down on his back. It hurt. It hurt a lot. Jack was pretty sure something had broken or at least cracked in his spine, and he fell forward onto his stomach from the force of the impact. Bert continued striking him, landing blow after blow in such quick succession that it was all Jack could do to curl up and attempt to keep his head protected. He did manage to reposition himself after a few seconds, orienting his feet toward Bert. He reached back with his free hand, leveraging himself against an old piece of furniture, and kicked hard with both legs. The blow caught Bert in the stomach and knocked him back with the same forceful punishment that might have come from a startled horse. Jack scrambled to his feet, rushing toward Bert before the ghoul could rise again. He started hacking with his sword, swinging it in clumsy, violent strikes. For all the elegance of his weightless, ethereal weapon, the desperate salvo he unleashed on Bert was anything but. He cut off Bert's arm and then one of his legs. He watched Bert attempt to crawl away from him, gurgling and pushing himself across the floor with his sole remaining foot. Jack kicked him hard between the shoulder blades and used the sole of his shoe to hold the ghoul in place. He let the edge of his black and red sword settle against the monster's neck for a moment and then brought it down in a powerful cleaving strike, separating head from body. The other two ghouls were still alive, though hobbled beyond the point of being threatening. Jack repeated the grisly procedure with each of them. He felt that strange, unwanted rush again. It was a mixture of primal, ancient emotions, and it reverberated through him. He was the victor. He was the one left standing. He was still alive, and it felt so good that it was a little unnerving. The pit was silent in the wake of the fight, and the ensuing calm left room for Jack's anxiety to slither its way back in. He let go of his spectral sword and felt a subtle magical pressure subside as the blade evaporated in a puff of shadow and smoke, dismissed for the moment. It was time for him to leave. He wasn't interested in spending a second longer in the pit than he absolutely had to. Behind him, against one of the curved, rocky walls, Jack found the mechanical lift that had once brought miners to and from the surface. He stood inside it, fumbling around with his hands until he found the mechanism to work it. The switches were covered in grime, and none of them did anything. Instead, he felt around for the metal elevator line connecting the lift to the surface. It was rusted and painful to grip, but also frayed to the point of being easily climbable. Jack slowly began to pull himself up, alternating between reaching with his hands and squeezing his legs against the thick elevator line to hold himself in place. He was surprised when he reached the top and discovered that the sun was still out. The darkness of the pit had felt eternal, like something that would follow him through the rest of his life. A shiver went down his back as he considered what had just occurred down below. Mira had gathered those ghouls for a purpose, and he hadn't the slightest idea what it was. It was a long walk back to the mansion, but it gave Jack's remaining adrenaline a chance to burn itself out. His throat felt a little itchy, but overall his bloodthirst was more manageable than it had been for the past few days. He wondered if the sunlight affected how strongly it came on, or if maybe what Katie had said about it being stronger for the first few days after being turned was close to the truth. Ryoko was sweeping the foyer floor when Jack entered, and she flinched in surprise when she saw him. Jack frowned and looked down at himself. He did have some blood on him, mostly from the ghouls, but the dirt from the pit and the rust from the elevator line had more or less covered it up. His clothes were ruined, and he smelled terrible, but there was nothing criminally suspicious about his appearance.
"I'll set out a new outfit for you, sir," said Ryoko.
"Thanks," said Jack. "Are you curious about how I ended up like this?"
"A little," she replied. "But it wasn't uncommon for Mr. Masterson, your grandfather, to get a little dirty on his adventures. It must run in the family."
She winked at him, and Jack felt a flush come across his cheeks. Ryoko didn't tease him like that very often, and it was refreshing to be reminded of the girl underneath the uniform. She hurried off to the kitchen, returning to hand Jack a plastic garbage bag while he was still on his way upstairs. He took the hint, stripping his clothes off and depositing them in the bag for disposal before stepping into the shower.
He took his time scrubbing the filth from every inch of his pale body. Something about what had happened in the pit still had him on edge. At first, he'd thought it was akin to an adrenaline hangover. But there was a different quality to it, less excitable and more calculated. He wiped a hand across his face, wincing as a soap bubble popped near his eye. It was more than just his circumstances that were changing. He was changing along with them. Jack dried off and headed for his room, dressed only in a towel. Ryoko was coming out just as he reached the door, and she jumped in surprise and brought a hand to her mouth. "Sorry," said Jack. "I didn't realize I was walking so quietly."
"It's my fault, sir."
Ryoko bowed, blushing a little as she looked at him.
"Your clothes are ready for you?"
Jack frowned a little and glanced down at himself. The towel wasn't covering him quite as completely as he'd assumed. He hurried to readjust, feeling his cheeks heat up as he realized that he'd just accidentally flashed his maid, while Ryoko hurried off down the hallway. Chapter 22. She'd set out comfortable clothes for him, a t-shirt, sweatpants, and a loose-fitting windbreaker. Jack pulled the clothing, savoring the sensation of the soft, clean fabric against his skin. He heard the sound of a conversation as he made his way downstairs, and he wasn't surprised to find Katie drinking tea in the mansion's lounge. She had on black leggings and a tunic-style sweater, and her hair was hanging in a neat brown braid.
"Hey," said Jack. "Good to see you."
He took a seat next to her on the couch, leaving some room in the center between them. The last time he'd seen her had been when she left with Bruce the previous night, and the last time they'd had a chance to talk freely had been back before his encounter with Mira.
"Likewise," said Katie. "Now make with the explanations. I need to know what the fuck happened last night. And Ryoko said you went on some kind of adventure today?"
Jack heard her question, but it barely registered over his own thoughts. He was still thinking about the quarry pit, and about the darkness. About the missing memories from the period surrounding the time he'd last had a near-death experience.
"Katie," he said, "what do you remember from the time when my parents died?"
She frowned at him. "How is this at all relevant?" she asked. "That was 12 years ago, Jack."
"I never found it weird that I didn't remember, given how much it affected me," said Jack, "until now. I should at least have some memories from that time, but it's all blank. What happened?"
A hint of concern entered Katie's expression, and she slid one of her knees up to hug against her chest.
"To be honest, I don't really know either," she said. "I remember that time, but it was all so sudden. I found out about the car crash from Peter, and I never got a chance to see you again after it happened. You left the island pretty much immediately."
Jack rubbed at his forehead, as though he could use his fingers to coax life back into his recollection.
"There's something there," he said. "Something I'm not seeing."
"I wish I could help you," said Katie. "But seriously, we need to focus on the present right now. What have you been doing, Jack?" Her tone shifted as she asked the last question, and though it wasn't exactly accusatory, it did have an edge to it.
"I'm not even sure where to begin," said Jack. "A lot has happened."
He went on to relate the events of the eventful night and morning. Katie frowned as he gave her the gist of what had happened with Mira and warned him not to listen to her. Her frown deepened as he talked about the attempted mugging. As Jack moved on to explaining his near arrest that morning and the call that had brought Bruce to the quarry, Katie folded her arms across her chest.
"You can't blame him for running away from a ghoul, Jack," said Katie.
"Multiple ghouls, by your account."
"I can, and I do," he said. "He was the one with the gun. I was totally unarmed."
"You're a fucking vampire," said Katie. "And he's just normal. It's part of why I love him." Her words stung him a little, even though he knew they shouldn't. He brushed off his ego and continued telling her about what he'd discovered, not letting himself worry about Katie's decisions.
"I think the ghouls were there for a reason," he said, describing the pit. "It was like they were waiting for something, almost like when we first found Bert in the warehouse."
She's probably using it as a place to hide them during the day, said Katie. Or maybe the pit is where she dumps them when she's done with them. It wouldn't be the first time someone's been caught using it to dispose of things they don't need. Jack frowned. For some reason, he didn't like the idea of Mira being so flippant about people's lives, even though he'd already seen other examples of her callousness. She'd turned him into a vampire on a whim, as a way of proving a point to his dead grandfather. Why was it hard for him to believe that she could be the type to kill indiscriminately?
I guess it's possible, he said.
You sure you got all of them that were down there? Asked Katie. Jack nodded slowly, remembering the rush he'd felt as he fought for his life and cut through the monsters with his sword.
Yeah, I got them all, he said.
Anyway, you're lucky to have made it through the fight alive, said Katie. Ghouls are serious business. Even as a blood mage, you could have easily died if they'd overwhelmed you. Jack shrugged, but he was too tired to focus much on what Katie was saying. Now that he was back at the mansion, he had a chance to breathe for a minute and consider what he should do next.
Were you planning on going out later and looking for Mira again? He asked.
I can't tonight, said Katie. Bruce has been getting so angry about how often I've been out lately. Jack nodded, feeling a strange sense of relief. The plan was still for them to find Mira and kill her. If they could do that, it would mean ridding himself of vampirism and returning to life as a regular human. That was still what he wanted, but he was beginning to feel intrigued by the possibilities of his blood magic in the meantime.
I think I'll go out on my own then, said Jack.
You had better fucking not, said Katie. This isn't a game, Jack.
I'm aware of that, said Jack, which is why it makes sense for us to keep up the pressure on Mira.
Don't be stupid, said Katie. You won't stand a chance against her on your own. Promise me you won't try it.
Katie, come on, she said. Seriously, Jack, I know you're not an idiot. Promise me.
Jack heard a hint of something that sounded suspiciously like concern in her voice. He nodded after a couple of seconds.
Fine, he said. I won't go after Mira.
Thank you, said Katie. He smiled at her, and she smiled back. A silent second passed, and the tension and potential of the moment was thick in the air. It had almost been an entire day since Jack had last fed, and he couldn't stop his eyes from lingering on the supple nape of Katie's neck. He slid closer to her on the couch, feeling a little like a middle schooler making his first move on a girl. Katie tensed up, and a shiver ran through her as Jack let his fingers touch her neck.
Jack, she whispered, I don't think you should.
Isn't this why you came here, Katie? He spoke the words into her ear, quietly, confidentially. I'm going to have to feed again soon. We both know it.
I know, said Katie.
The urge to sink his fangs in was almost overwhelming, but it was interlaced with other desires. He wanted to kiss her neck and her lips. He wanted to hold her close. He wanted to forget that she was engaged to another man.
You don't want me to bite you, he said,
stating it rather than asking the question. He drew a little closer to her, one of his hands settling on her thigh on autopilot. Katie's eyelids fluttered, and she licked her lips.
It's the way it feels, Jack.
Does it hurt you when I do it?
No,
she said quickly. No, it's not that. It's the opposite of that. The feeling, Jack, it's like I'm lifting off the ground. It's this rush, almost like I'm... She swallowed hard and shook her head slightly. Finally, she turned to meet his gaze directly, her face only inches away from Jack's.
Do you remember the silly things we used to say to each other when we were little? She asked.
Yeah, said Jack. I remember. I thought that was the boy that would be coming back to the island, she said. And it seemed like it was when you first got here. You were supposed to be sweet and innocent, Jack. He wasn't about to claim that he was those things. Not anymore. He started kissing Katie's neck, driven by both his bloodlust and another, more intense emotion.
Fuck, whispered Katie. This isn't fair. You weren't supposed to.
She trailed off. Jack pulled her into an embrace, his lips pressing into hers. He let his kisses travel across her cheek, and then used his